It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. Just like John Fox said, it is the 18th day of August 2017. It's Friday, just like the little shout there at the beginning of the program said. We're just full of just like somebody else said. Maybe I should just go away and let somebody else say the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We have made it through an entire week of my return from Agnes and my epic trip to the Gulf Coast and back. And here at the end of the week, let's just get this out of the way. We find ourselves in a $380 fundraising hole. $380. So with that in mind, hopefully, I guess we'll have to rely on maybe another one of those little Friday on the front porch miracles. One of those human-made miracles that seem to happen around here. It would be nice not to carry a deficit into next week. 10 at 38, 38 at 10, 1 at 380, 2 at 190. Oh, dear. 4 at 95. 8 at 47.50. Yeah, okay. That's about as far as I'm going to go with that. But that's where we stand. And hopefully we will be at all even Steven by the time the 3 hours are over with this evening. Carol Baker with an early question. Gotcha on, well, this isn't a question. Gotcha on tune in. So, yeah, everything is working this evening. Yay! Carol noting, heard Steve Bannon's out. Does he get a presidential library even though he didn't serve a full term? Early cowbell. There's still more Nazis. There's still more Nazis in the White House. Seb Gorka and Stephen Miller come immediately to mind. They got to go too, but it's worth remembering they didn't make Donald Trump be a Nazi or a Nazi sympathizer. No. His daddy did that, and so as the saying goes, we ain't out of the woods by a long shot. Okay, so we've got that to talk about this evening, and of course it's Friday on the front porch. And I'll be running Friday on the Front Porch. If you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, you need to reach out to me, Bob Kincaid Horn, on Skype here in about an hour when I light the Bob signal. Okay? And then as people pop in, I'll add you to the conversation. I hope we will have a rousing Friday on the Front Porch conversation, because Lord knows I have missed it. We missed one last week, missed a whole week last week, and it was Well, it just seemed weird for it to be Friday and us not to be engaging in our little conversation. Another reminder, and again, if you participate this way, your card will not be charged until the 1st of September. We're trying to expand the subscriber base so that fundraising attempts every blessed night of the program can finally be reduced. And toward that end, if you want to participate, yeah, I mean, it won't make any difference on this month's bill paying, but over at Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, you can sign up for a subscription, and with the end of each month, we'll go through and we'll send out bumper stickers. A ten buck subscription gets you one. A $20 subscription gets you both of them, the horn sticker, and a "They Want It All" sticker. So bear that in mind if you want to help out. Of course, if you're happy with PayPal, you can just click the little box. Make this a recurring monthly donation. Dun 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 dun. Or just put a number in. Okay. So that's where all of that is. Now, I suspect when we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, a discussion unlike any in progressive radio that I'm aware of anywhere else, I've got a sneaking suspicion we'll still be talking about Klansmen and Nazis and statues and monuments and various and sundry along those lines. And that's fine by me. A lot of other stuff has gone on around it, but it's understandable if that's what gets our attention. And, of course, there's the Bannon thing. That, too. But I have, all week long, and y'all have written to me about it, and Scott mentioned it the other night during our conversation. I get a lot of benefit out of getting out of the studio and seeing a little bit of the countryside from time to time. It gets the intellectual juices flowing. Oh, wait, another. Okay, that's too early, cowbells. This one going out to Clarence. Subject line: looking for work. Bob, I hear racist Bannon has appeared in his last episode of Donnie Quest. Well, that's really high quality. That's restaurant quality, Clarence. That's good. Oh, yes. So, if you'll bear with me for a moment or two, okay, for the filibobster. You might, it might prove a fruitful, we might be able to turn some ground and make it good for conversation. As you know, Agnes and I took off a week ago, 2 weeks ago, tomorrow. We headed south. We headed to the place where I was born and raised. The first part of our vacation was actually quite sad. A man who was a dear friend of mine had passed away. We'd been friends just about as long as we've both been on the planet. And he died, he had died a couple of days earlier. There was a memorial service for him on Sunday. And on Monday, we hit the road. And by hit the road, I mean went on further. It takes about 10 hours to get from here to the old home place. And it's another 300-plus miles to the Gulf Coast, which was my destination, our destination. Our destination in the supremely uncomfortable, yet moderately gas-miserly Nissan Sentra rental. And it involved a lot of little two-lane roads. And it carried me through a lot of Alabama countryside. Deep South countryside. Through little places like Oh, Phil Campbell in Alabama. And Chatham. And Citronelle. Along the way, we hit one some bitch of a thunderstorm. Hoo-wee! I don't think Agnes had ever seen anything quite like it. If it had turned out to had a tornado in it, I would not have been a nickel's worth of surprised. We were just a little bit south and east of Tuscaloosa when the thing hit, and I mean, it was nasty. We wound up, the gasoline version, Marty, it was, no hybrid. The hybrid was another $15 a day. I didn't know there was a Nissan Sentra hybrid, but yeah, maybe, who knows. It's probably uncomfortable, too. But we were a little southeast of Tuscaloosa when the storm hit, and we wound up pulled over at a little gas station at curiously named for the area, Union, Alabama, exit. And I mean, it blew hell-bent for leather for about an hour. But I sat there with the phone and watched the radar go across until I saw a gap, ran down to exactly the very next exit and got off on US 43 and continued southward through a little town called Utah, E-U-T-A-W. And along the way, let's see, we also went through a place that was settled by overly optimistic French folks, a little town called Demopolis. And they had hopes of raising olives and grapes for wine. It didn't work out. They wound up raising cotton and getting into the slave business. And all along the way, we saw two things primarily along the roadsides. We saw ads for personal injury lawyers, and we saw campaign signs for either Mo Brooks Less Brains, Roy Tola Moore, or The Strange Guy. As noted previously, Mo Brooks Less Brains wound up out in the cold, and The Strange Guy will square off against Roy Tola Moore in a runoff in, what, September, October? And then a general election in December, in which Doug Jones, the Democratic nominee, will probably be stomped beyond all recognition, although I would be very, very happy if the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that constantly reads, "Answer Hazy, ask again later," prove me wrong. We went down, we had a lovely time, and in the midst of, of course, we were days away yet from the vile, filthy racism, anti-Semitism, bigotry, xenophobia, hatefulness of what happened in Charlottesville. But at that point in time, everything on the radio said, hey, Donald Trump may decide to blow up the world tomorrow. So that was on our minds. And every time the news would come on, Agnes would look at the radio and press the little button that said scan. Because the thinking was, well, if you want to be paying attention to the news, we can just turn around and go right back home to West Virginia, and you can do that. This is supposed to be a vacation. I wasn't particularly effective at it. It's inescapable. But we did manage to spend a lot of time talking about other things. And the other thing that we talked about is we went southwards down the west side of Alabama was why the South is the way it is. And it's not like I have any magic answers or secret knowledge. I am not a member of the Gnostic faith of Southern Solutions. But you can't be down there and not ask questions about not just where the region is, but where we are as a country. Because it's gorgeous country. It's beautiful countryside, but it's bathed in blood, steeped in misery, stewed in poverty, and does not have to, I mean, and apart from history being history, doesn't have to be, the poverty doesn't have to be what it is. There are aspects of it that are matters of choice, choices that have gone back 200 years. The little town where I was born will be 200 years old next year. Settlements in the area go back before, well before that. I was talking about the fact that the French were in what is now Mississippi in the late 17th century, committing genocide. But how to get about this? I hope I don't piss anybody off by making this comparison. But as we drove, what popped into my mind was the speech that Booker T. Washington gave at the Atlanta Exposition in September 18th, 1895. And Booker T. Washington's memory still gets a good hiding for it. And contemporaneously, W.E.B. Du Bois and he were fierce intellectual rivals over what he said at the Atlanta Exposition. Without regard to the rightness and wrongness of his overall position, he suggested to what was at the time an almost entirely white audience that if the South did not include relatively recently freed African American ex-slaves in its economic steps forward, well, what he offered was a choice. Either be inclusive and everybody prospers together, or continue to be exclusive. And he said that the black population of the South would forever be a millstone around the neck of the white South. I'm paraphrasing. But I thought about that not in terms of race or ethnicity, but in terms of regionalism. I'd love to have Dr. Bill O'Brien in on this conversation, or maybe Keith Lilly, and the rest of y'all when we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. The South has had pockets of growth. Cities like Charlotte, Nashville, Atlanta, Charleston, to a certain extent Memphis, were once hailed as evidence, and the infusion of industry into the region were hailed as evidence of a new South. And there's been a massive population shift with the rise of air conditioning into the South. But despite all of the apparent forward economic progress, which I think if we examine it, is much more limited than we would prefer to think, the South still operates on political principles that are anywhere from 155 to 200 years old and older. You can ballyhoo about the forward advances, say, of Virginia, but Virginia doesn't advance without having the national capital sitting right there at the top of the state. It just doesn't. And all you need for proof is to go down to somewhere like, say, Wise County, which is still suffering monumentally because it was consigned to a coal heap, and that's all it ever has been. And people do want better. I'm going to try to engage this conversation, and I'm sorry if it's not funny and lighthearted like we do on Friday. Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit. You can't talk about the South without talking about race. But I want to talk about the South in relation to the rest of the country. There are places in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee that are every bit as inviting and beautiful as anything up and down the Pacific Coast. And I'm not trying to piss off people in California, Oregon, and Washington. The Pacific Coast is long and breathtakingly beautiful. But there is nothing, okay, so the Port of Los Angeles and the history of seafaring out of places like Seattle and Portland and San Francisco, that contributed to the growth of the areas. The Port of L.A. Brings in the wealth of Asia to the United States. Got it. But in terms of just pure geography, there's no reason that that area should be more wealthy than, say, another. Places like Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia. You'll see little fits and starts as corporations like Hyundai and Kia, Mercedes-Benz and BMW set up shop. But they're setting up shop there because they know that because of the 200-year-old antiquated political ideas that hold sway there, they know that they can pay people substandard wages and even get away with flouting things like workplace safety laws that keep young women from being crushed to death by robots, which happened in Alabama. The Gulf Coast from Fort Walton Beach, Destin, over to Gulfport is as magnificent and beautiful a natural setting as you could ever hope to see. And rivals anywhere on either the east or the west coast. The geographic interior is breathtakingly beautiful in its own way, absent something like the Rocky Mountain Range. They have their own charms. Ask any of the people who, say, flock to Asheville, North Carolina, to vacation or hike or ecotourism or what have you. even the same can be said about where we live here in West Virginia. But the problem is that as long as the South continues in its current path, continues with its commitment to regressive politics, it will, as Booker T. Washington said in 1895, be a millstone around the neck of the rest of the nation. And it most assuredly is. The other night, talking with Scott, I talked about that monumental, and I'm just using it as an example, that monumental welcome center, brand new, opened to the public on January the 1st, 2017, that sits just inside the Alabama line, running east on I-10 from Mississippi. I'll post some more pictures of it. It's breathtaking. It's gorgeous. There's an element of genius involved insofar as it's a hurricane evacuation center as well. And again, even if BP Horizon disaster money built it, there has to be federal money in it somewhere because it's sitting right by, you know, an interstate highway. And it's exactly the kind of money that gets brought home, that if it's brought home to a Democratic state, Republicans rail about and call and scream and call pork. But even if there is not a damn dime of federal money in it, the fact that it was built with BP Horizon money that was pursued not necessarily by the state of Alabama, but by the federal government, is a confession on the part of that state that they could not have done that themselves and would not have done that themselves had they not had the money. Last night, we had the audio from a woman named Melissa Francis. She's the one over at Fox who cried when no one would agree with her that there are nice Nazis. I checked her out, and I found some comment that where she said, I just hate big government and believe in conservative economic free market economic principles. And that got me going. She hates big government. But she damn sure doesn't hate big government enough to hate the U.S. military. You can't have the U.S. military that we have without big government. She's another one of these idiots who parrots right-wing think tank talking points without ever pondering exactly what they mean. Oh, she hates big government. But she likes good roads. She hates big government. But she enjoys being able to drink the water without being poisoned. You get the idea. But no matter how many plants, how many factories, how many corporations locate in the Deep South to take advantage of the low wages there, and the lack of worker protections. No matter. The South will remain a millstone around the neck of the nation as long as it clings to antiquated and often racist political notions from 200 years ago. The weird thing is, it has not been a consistent 200-year process. I went and found today a photograph that I have mentioned before of Franklin Delano Roosevelt driving down Court Street in Florence, Alabama in 1933. He's in an open-topped car. He wasn't worried about any of the folks coming out to see him, gunning him down. And if you look at the photograph, which again I will try to post on Facebook later, you will see that people are 10, 15 deep on the sidewalks, hanging out of windows, standing on rooftops to get a glimpse of the man who had saved them from death. To get to see the person who was responsible via what generations later, Republicans would call big government stepping in to prevent complete chaos, starvation, misery, and death. So we know that people can learn. We know that they can comprehend the need for good progressive government. But somewhere along the way, maybe after they stopped being hungry, I don't know, they abandoned it. Actually, I think I do know. I absolutely do. It's what LBJ said when he signed the Civil Rights Act of 1965. We have lost the South for a generation. And it was over race. There was a collective decision by the people in power all over the South that they would rather have the South fail than have everyone succeed together. So we loop back to the question posed by Booker T. Washington, intentionally or unintentionally. And so you drive through little towns where once upon a time there were sewing factories, where practically every, where every family in an entire town worked at a sewing plant and made good wages. And then along came, and you're probably sick of hearing it because, God knows, Bernie and Trump both hammered away on it, along came NAFTA. And from the right and the left, people told the globalist, neoliberal, Republicans and Democrats that it would be hell to pay in the United States. And and there are places in the South that you can go through, and the towns are ghost towns. Because one day there were 1,000 jobs, and the next day there were zero. That's not to say it happened only in the South, but it happened there. In places that were so economically fragile that there was no way to recover. In my hometown, I saw all kinds of development going on. The university there that we used to laughingly call Tuna, the University of North Alabama. By God, next football season, not the one coming up, but the next one, they're going to play Division I football. They don't have a stadium to play it in, but they're going to play Division I football. And they're building for all they're worth, tearing down buildings, putting up new buildings in their place. The universities in almost open warfare with the local school system because the local school system wanted to use a place that where the old high school used to be to build a new middle school, and the university sued to get them stopped and said, oh, hell no. We want that land. But the industrial prosperity that was there isn't there anymore. The industrial prosperity that brought a whole bunch of people from all over the country to that little corner of northwest Alabama and made it a brigadoon in the middle of the deep South isn't there. I talked to the lady at my favorite barbecue joint, and she said, there's no jobs here. They still want it to be a retirement community. I said, that's not much of an economic model because, you know, there's no generational perpetuation. She said, I know that. But there's no jobs. And so the question become, and this is the question that gnawed on Agnes and me as we drove south. How do you change all that? I mean, we have examples of what good progressive-minded government can do for the people who support it and live with it and participate in it. They're there. But they want no part of it. And they want no part of it because from time before time, they've had this toxic medicine of things like states' rights and so-called conservatism, which is just a bullshit phrase, a bullshit term for the wealthy keeping the wealth and everybody else scrambling and catch as catch can. That's Southern conservatism. They were conservative before the Civil War. You've got to be conservative now. But that photo, and others like it, from 1933 in Florence, Alabama, tells me that people can learn. It's just a question of how you communicate the message. And I mentioned the other night that it would be nice, it would be nice if there could be a Bernie Sanders with a nice, solid Southern accent. Not the middle of the road halfway to being a Republican stuff that snake oil that Bill Clinton was peddling in the 90s. I guess it was good enough for the 90s. But, well, NAFTA, right? Welfare reform didn't work out so well, did it? Man, he was a true believer in that. And so were a bunch of Democrats. But somehow or another, we have to get over the hump, this notion that we can talk at the South instead of talking with the South. Because for all, and I hear it, I understand it, I sympathize with it, and sometimes I even agree with it. For all the impulse that says, screw them, let them go, better off without them. I remember a book several years ago called Whistling Past Dixie. And another called Better Off Without Them. The politics of the South will continue to fuck the United States for as long as it remains the way it is. Ask yourself the question, what would happen to presidential electoral politics if you had even a fighting chance of getting two or three Southern states along with the typically reliably blue states that seem to be the only ones that matter to the multimillionaire Democratic campaign strategy class? You break the solid South, and you break the Republican Party. As progressives, does it ever dawn on us, or do we just think of them as those people? What would happen? What would happen if you could bring, say, Alabama along for a Democratic presidential candidate? Or a Georgia. Georgia has more electoral college votes, but that's an electoral college, different topic. What would happen if you took, and if you've never been there, you can't understand why I get so worked up about it. What would happen if you took a drop dead beautiful place like Alabama, and could get people active in a progressive way? Do we understand that it is not enough for the future of the United States of America It's like a bucket with a thin bottom. You've got nice strong sides in Washington, Oregon, California, Massachusetts, New York, Maryland. Good strong handles, but the bottom's paper thin. And when the bottom goes out, everything goes, and it doesn't matter how goddamn good the handles are. Eventually, as I've said before, people like the Koch brothers, Chuck and Dave, and all the various massively moneyed right-wing think tanks don't think for a minute that they don't look at what they've got and want more. There's a plan out there, and you can tell me I'm crazy, but I'm not. There's a plan out there for a conservative California. There's a plan out there for a right-wing New York. Hell, I mean, you know, look what they did to Wisconsin. The single most progressively driven philosophy in state government that this entire country had, and it is bled out and dead. And Wisconsin gets to be a little bit more like Alabama every day. And we seem to have some notion that we can that we could just hold back the barbarian tides in places like Massachusetts and California. And that someday people will, through osmosis, come to their senses. Yeah, David in South Carolina stand gets it. He says, imagine Charleston, South Carolina, with San Francisco's political philosophy, or at least going in that direction. One of the things that the one time in my life I've been in California, the one thing that spoke to me about the San Francisco area was that it looked an awful lot like the America, maybe one of the reasons that people in places like Alabama and Mississippi spend so much time hating New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles and Boston is because those are places where America still works, where the ideas of America still work. The entire system is broken into a million tiny pieces all over the South. And yet the millionaire class of Democratic campaign strategists will say, well, you know, there's no sense in putting any money into that. The other night I said that Doug Jones, the Democratic nominee for Senate in Alabama, and I said it earlier this evening, likely just a sacrificial lamb. What if he wasn't? What if you could break the Southern lock and put a Democrat who actually has a history of convicting Klansmen into the Senate seat of a man who has a history of saying, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuanas. You know, the current Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood. Because the Democratic nominee in Alabama is that guy. He's the guy who had the balls to dig back into the dim, bloody mists of history and try Klansmen for things they had done 40 years before. And won. I think Bernie's philosophy has part of the solution. Talking about economic populism, talking about making us all lifting up the country by lifting up the working class. But that's only a piece of it. Because Bernie is not competent to talk about the toxic issues of religion in the South. I'm sure maybe some people would disagree with me, but that's fine. But you've got to talk more, talk about more than economic populism. And then you have to deliver. So that means you need a president and a Congress. One of the things that goes alongside the Bernie could have won bullshit is that so what? He wouldn't have gotten a goddamn thing done. He couldn't have gotten any more done than Barack Obama got done because of the Congress. So that means you've got to change the way people vote on a district level. You've got to change state government. I didn't say this was going to be easy. Somewhere along the way, you've got to be able to look at people and say, hey, and show them that picture with FDR. That's your great granddaddy. That's your great grandma showing up to thank a liberal progressive Democrat for saving them from dying of starvation. For making it possible for you to be sitting here and going, I don't think much. I want some states' rights and small government. Well, shut up, Gomer. See, and this is why I couldn't do it. Because you can't say, shut up, Gomer. It has to be a... It has to be a gentler sort of... conversation. But you got to get around the precious little fetuses, and you got to be able to talk about guns like you actually know what guns are. And I recognize that. I think it is dumber than hell that you've got people out there, you know, daddies who put little who leave little single shot 22s laying around so the 5-year-old can blow away the 3-year-old. God damn. But you will never, never win in the South talking about some sort of larger disarmament strategy. Constitutional rights must be understood to be constitutional rights. On the other hand, you take Charlottesville and... that was an armed march. 100 years ago, an armed march in West Virginia was sufficient to bring out, because there's not a dime's worth of difference between the guns of the Klansmen in Charlottesville and the guns, okay, better guns in Charlottesville, but conceptually, 100 years ago, a bunch of pissed off miners picked up rifles and started marching in southern West Virginia, and they got the Air Force called out on them to bomb them. 100 years later, the cops look at the guns that the marching Klansmen and Nazis have and turn asshole and elbow. Nothing is impossible. There is a way to have this conversation, and there is a way to turn the South. I don't necessarily have the answer, but I know there is a way. David in South Carolina suggests we can begin with Democrats stopping this perfect candidate bullshit. And that's the absolute truth. Anybody who thinks that you can run a Seattle area progressive Democrat in Mississippi and win, well... I hear they got some pretty good psychoactives up there, and that would probably account for thinking that. You can't. Whatever it is, if there is anything that will save the South and make it stop being a millstone around our national neck, is going to have to be organic. And that's why I say that there are some things Bernie Sanders cannot do. I mean, it's crazy making. Like I said before, we drove past thousands of acres of corn burned up with drought in the fields, ruined crops, in an area that denies the existence of anthropogenic climate change. Holy cow. Does it matter? I mean, look at it this way. Yes, it matters if it's climate change. But to the person busting his ass or her ass to get the seeds in the ground and harvest the crop, if the crop dies every goddamn year, doesn't it become imperative to do something about it? Even if it galls you to call it climate change, don't you need a government that will respond to it with something more than a welfare check?
And then, of course, there's the fact that probably many of those thousands of acres were corporate farms. So, you know, fuck it, they'll write it off on their taxes. Because it wasn't going to feed anybody anyway. It was maybe going to be ethanol or high fructose corn syrup. Or at best, you know, cattle feed. That beautiful Gulf Coast I was talking about ain't going to be there in a few more years. And it's going to take a lot longer after that for there to be a beautiful Gulf Coast a hell of a lot further north, because it's just going to be a mess for a few hundred years, if not thousands. So I guess what I'm suggesting is that the beginning of all of this is to stop pretending that it's okay if part of the country does well and we just sort of welfare another big chunk of the country along in its wake. There are magnificent homes. There are gated communities down there. That nobody can work to ever live in. That a poor kid can't aspire to struggle up to get into. Because it's a closed loop economy down there. If your family's been rich for a couple of hundred years, well, yeah, you'll get one of those houses someday. But if you're born poor and black or poor and white, the odds of you ever living well, those days left with the sewing plants and the furnaces and the chemical plants and industry in general. So, you know, what's the overall answer? You know, this is not a program that's particularly well known for providing answers. Quite good at questions, really. But I know that whatever it is, it begins with abandoning the pretense that we can just forget about an entire region of the country. Until maybe they come to their senses. Because it doesn't work that way. This is not to say that the entire trip was like that. Chunks of it were, though, because I can't resist history. One of the things we did was to visit the site outside New Orleans, down toward Chalmette, of the Battle of New Orleans, which is a tiny site compared to something like something that would transpire 50 years later, like, say, Shiloh or Gettysburg. But what a brutal site that was. And with an eye toward discussing this this topic raised by the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen, they're erasing our history. I ran into some erased history. Literally erased history. If you look at my Facebook page, you'll find a photograph that says Wilderness
not Wilderness Tavern, but Wilderness something. And it's at Colbert Park on the south bank of the Tennessee River. And it was the site of a stand that was owned by a man named George Colbert, whose daddy was Scots and mama was Chickasaw. And he used the Chickasaw half to set himself up in business when the young federal government acknowledged that all that land was Chickasaw land. And he then established a ferry across the Tennessee River below the Muscle Shoals, which was a brutally difficult place to cross. And got rich, 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 rich. Filthy rich. And put up travelers on the Natchez Trace at his stand. Colbert's stand. In addition to the ferry business, he had a plantation. He operated that plantation with slaves. It's one of those things that we don't talk about much because perhaps it's not very comfortable to talk about the fact that part of the reason that white folks referred to Indians in the Southeast as the civilized tribes was because they had adopted a bunch of nasty white ways, not the least of which was chattel slavery. There were stolen Africans brought to this continent who were purchased by Indians. George Colbert got filthy rich, but he wasn't rich enough or white enough to keep from having his ass removed under Andrew Jackson's attempted genocide and sent down the Trail of Tears. But if you're going to be sent down the Trail of Tears, it's best to go down there in the best wagons with all of your stuff and all of your slaves. And that's exactly what George Colbert did. There's a Colbert, Oklahoma, just like there's a Colbert County, Alabama, because he went out to Oklahoma and got rich all over again using slaves. Slaves in the Indian nations were freed after slaves were freed from white ownership. Really. And so we come back to that sign. I've been going to that place since I was a little boy. And the sign says Wilderness Haven. And it shows a photo of Colbert's stand after it had fallen into extreme disrepair. Walking around the site, you can see some of the foundation stones of the building still peeking through the ground. Agnes and I walked over to the bluff where you can see the river. And a massive oak tree, every bit of 150 to 200 years old, had recently been felled by a windstorm or lightning. It was one of those twin-trunked trees, and it was split in twain. One side went toward the river, the other side went away from it. That thing, as a seedling, probably saw George Colbert's slaves working at his stand. Now, the Natchez Trace Parkway is maintained by the federal government. I'm not sure if Colbert Park is a state thing or a federal thing, but it has interpretive signs, like the one on my Facebook page labeled Wilderness Haven. And if you look at the sign on my Facebook page, you can read along with me. Wilderness Haven. After a venison supper, one guest at Colbert's stand spent the night in an outbuilding with, quote, dot, 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 not less than 50 Indians, comma. And if you look closely, you'll see that there's a comma after 50 Indians, and then literally obliterated words. I think, digging back into my own memory, that's something like not less than 50 Indians and black slaves. But the part about the slaves has literally been whited out. And it continues here, and at about 20 other stands along the trace, Kaintuck riverboatmen, money-laden businessmen, Indians, and outlaws shared a spot of fellowship on a long, hazardous road. So from that text, we can know that they didn't white out Kaintuck. They didn't white out riverboatmen or money-laden businessmen. We know from the quote that they didn't white out Indians. They didn't white out outlaws. They literally whited out the black people. I do not know why. But I know that it when it dawned on me, I felt really, really icky. Because that's not the same as taking down a statue. Oddly enough, it turns out that Robert E. Lee was consulted about memorials to the Confederacy while he was still alive. And he said, I would prefer we did not do such a thing. It would be best to let the wounds heal and not scratch them open again. Not that I'm defending Robert E. Lee, because I'm not. I still maintain he probably should... Well, not probably, he should have been hanged. I consulted an expert on such things when I realized the history had been... the history of black people had literally been whited out. Dr. John said, it is an uncomfortable fact, but damn it, that's what history is. He said, preaching to the choir, I know. Some would say there's value in erasing trauma, obliterating slavery from memory. I think that's sort of the German approach to the Nazis, right? They do all they can to keep the iconography from resurfacing, but even there, it's not like they tear down the camps. There's lots of memorials in Germany and the rest of Europe to what the Nazis did. It doesn't glorify Nazis like Confederate memorials glorify Confederates. Dr. John continues and says, there's lots of context. The Spanish Civil War comes to mind because I used to read a lot of archaeologists who worked in that period. There have been sustained efforts to obliterate material evidence of the conflict, everything from physical damage to markers that ordinary people put up, to removing mass graves. Consigning the past to oblivion is of necessity a political act. Someone is saying, this you cannot see or experience or remember, which removes the materiality of remembrance, those objects or landscapes around which people who have been wronged can organize for redress. And that puts it a lot better than I could have, with the emphasis on if you obliterate it, people can't organize around it for redress of grievances. There is a lot of memorialization of the Trail of Tears in that area, because it was both starting point and waypoint. But the idea that we would obliterate the ownership of slaves by Native Americans? Does that serve a purpose? If it serves a purpose, what purpose does it serve? But the point is that there's some history that people are worried about obliterating, and oddly enough, it seems to be histories of white grievance. And there's other history that we can literally white out, and no one will object. And it's all part of a set piece of the historical horrors of the South and how it plays into whatever future the South will have. We can talk about it if you want to. Oh, sure, there are more. There's more stories. Shucks, that's just the drive down. I don't even have the drive back yet. I haven't even touched that or the run to New Orleans. No. But I have filibustered 10 minutes into what should be the ordinary, extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, the Friday on the Front Porch discussion group. If you wish to be a part of that, reach out on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, and slowly but surely I will begin adding folks to the conversation. I really hope we can have a rousing one because, like I said, I've missed it terribly. And I really hope that we can catch up with the fundraising, $380 this evening. Of which we have raised zero. And bills to pay. So, we'll take a break. I'll fire up some music that seems appropriate to the moment. And we'll gather together the group. Consider the Bob signal lighted. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. Friday on the Front Porch, the 18th of August, 2017. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This time and every time. It's always such a pleasure and an honor for us to come back to Birmingham and get treated so well. It's so nice. Thank you all. Watching the raccoons and terrapins dance on the rock. She let me put my hand up under her shirt. And I wanted her to want me so bad it hurt. So I thank God for the TV. Thank God for the TV. Where me and my baby used to hide out and wait on the day. Thank God for the TV. My granddaddy told me just seven or so. His daddy lost work and he didn't have a road to home. Not nearly enough, nine boys and three girls. They all lived in a tent, bunch of sharecroppers versus the world. So his mama sat down, wrote a letter to FDR. And a couple days later, some county men came in a car. They rode out in the field, told his daddy to put down the plow. He helped build the dam that gave power to most of the South. So I thank God for the TV. Thank God for the TV. Where Roosevelt let us all work for an honest day's pay. Thank God for the TV. Thank God for the TV.
Jason Isbell and the 400 unit.
Thank you.
Worked perfectly with the topic of the filibuster. Live from Alabama is the name of the album, and the name of the song is TVA. So, because that's the story of that region. I mean, the whole area used to be burned up on a routine basis by yellow fever until the federal government stepped in and did something about it, because the small government, conservative state government of Alabama was perfectly content to just let it go on, you know, forever. And, you know, you lose the occasional wealthy person, but mostly it's the poor folks who live in shitty conditions that wind up dying of typhoid fever and yellow fever. And you get the idea. Helen Keller became Helen Keller because of scarlet fever. But it was only because of federal government intervention. And look, they love their federal government intervention as long as they get to take it with one hand and then, you know, turn and look the other way and say, I want me a small federal government as long as it can keep doling out the pork from New York to California down here. Which is another way not to ever get them to change their ways, which is why I'm not the person to do that. Nonetheless, it is... It is Friday on the front porch, and Steve in New York has kindly added a $15 challenge to the table to get us off the schneid and get us started toward not having a monumental hole to fill in come Monday, which would be very, very nice. There's a $15 challenge on the table. Steve will match the next 15 bucks that come in and hopefully keep things going. You know, because this is a month-to-month operation. All right, let's go over and check in with the gang. Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy, and chat room moderator is with us. Hey, Steve.
Bob, can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, that's good. Good to know. A lot of background noise going on, and I can't tell if I'm muted or not.
You're not muted.
Perfect. So how you doing, Mr. Kincaid?
You know, I'm here, so I guess I'm okay.
I missed most of your filibuster tonight. I'll have to catch it on the podcast. When you try to get away for a few days, you spend, well, you know how it is.
You spend
14 hours trying to catch up to clear your desk off. You
and
know?
You're trying to get away for a few days.
Yes. Want to go up to Asheville to see the eclipse.
There we go. You got your you got your eclipse watching glasses?
Yeah, it's a good thing because you can't find any. They're like gold here, man. You cannot find any anywhere.
That's amazing. As of last Sunday, there were scads of them in the convenience stores in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is smack dab in Eclipse Central. But I imagine they're all gone now, too. I saw a note from Carol Baker on her Facebook page earlier today talking about the fact that she had given away a couple of pairs of Eclipse glasses to her mail carrier lady, who was absolutely thrilled to have them because they are not to be found anywhere out toward Hooterville way.
No, and they're cheap, too. I mean, a month ago, Karen was picking them up for $1 a piece. You're talking about capitalism. If you don't think it's that weird, you could, a month ago, you should have bought 100 pairs. You could have sold them for $5 a piece.
That's probably what happened.
Yeah.
Somebody got all free market about it, and that's why.
Yep.
So
what a week it's been.
Yeah. So when's your getaway?
I'm leaving tomorrow, and I'll be back Wednesday. But I will actually be able to mod on Tuesday. I should be back in time to be the mod. Monday you'll have to keep a tight eye out for the brain and company.
Okay. Well, maybe you could before you go tonight. Maybe you could promote somebody in the room.
I don't know how to do that. Maybe Duncan can do it. If he's listening, or I could take my tablet along and maybe Monday.
No. What sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. You're on vacation. I don't want you anywhere near this place.
No, I don't mind, Bob. Jeez, as much as you give to all us, it's the least I could do. So let me see if that will work, and we'll just go from there.
Okay. I thought I knew how to do it, but I didn't.
Yeah. I can do it on a day-to-day basis, but I don't know how to do it, you know, long-term or to schedule it out or anything.
Okay.
I think only the Mighty Duncan has those lightsaber amazing techniques far.
It comes with being sparky.
Yeah, he's so far advanced when it comes to this, you know. This is his chat room. I'm just his guest.
Exactly.
Right. But man, what a week it's been, though, Bob. Holy gosh, every day another bomb. Boom, 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 boom.
And that's not by accident. You realize that, right, Steve?
Is they're trying to shake their shiny keys at us, or?
No, they're just keeping us off balance. You'll notice the heat was getting a little hot around the Russia business. So, ta-da, North Korea. And then, ta-da, Charlottesville blows up, and that works out conveniently. And, you know, how long has it been since anybody talked about Trump and Russia?
Eons, but it's going to catch up with him, and I think he knows it. The guy that wrote The Art of the Deal has predicted that he's going to resign by year's end. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, we won't be in too much of a better place. At least
it would be a terrible blow.
Crazy person.
Remember, he is ruled by his passions and his ego. So that means I see it as highly unlikely that he would resign voluntarily. It's possible he, like Nixon, could be forced to resign, Steve, but that doesn't really. That would need a Congress that would be willing to put that pressure on him, and so far, what's his name? He's up for re-election, Corker in Tennessee. He offered the nearest thing to an actual condemnation, saying that Trump lacks stability, but as far as I'm concerned, it's all ashes in their mouth until somebody says we got to get rid of this guy. Until some Republican breaks that ceiling, it's all just theater.
Well, the guy that wrote The Art of the Deal, I can't think of his name, his theory is that the walls are closing in, Trump knows it, and the special prosecutor is fixing to lay the hammer down, and his ego is so big, rather than to be taken down, he will resign first and say, oh, the people just didn't want me, and you know what kind of spiel he'd throw out. He'd throw everything back on everybody else and make himself try to look like not the heavy, if that makes any sense.
Well, it does. The front end of that thing, where's the pressure going to come from that makes him quit?
I don't think there is any pressure per se. It's just, you know, he'll be able to finally connect the dots and realize that this, it's coming down on him, the special prosecutor. And I don't think there's going to be any wiggle room for him. And rather than him be impeached like Nixon, he'll take the easy road out. Because I don't think there's ever been a president thrown out of office. I mean, there's been a president impeached, which is an indictment. I know that. But I don't think it's ever been followed through, has it?
Well, I mean, they were the articles were drawn up for Nixon.
And they were drawn up for Clinton too.
And they were and Clinton was straight up and Clinton was acquitted. Straight up impeached, and he was tried in the Senate.
Right, but he was acquitted.
Yeah. Johnson was acquitted by one vote. No one's ever had to be removed from office. We don't even know necessarily what that would look like.
Right. And I don't think Trump wants that asterisk on his Wikipedia.
Yeah,
page.
But Steve, somebody has to be able to be willing to do it first.
Yeah, maybe I'm living in Pollyanna world.
That's the question I keep asking. He's not going to quit without pressure, and there's no pressure.
Even Mike last night was saying though that he thinks he'll resign, and coming from Mike, that's pretty strong, you know. Because you, him, you know, Michael Moore, you guys were the only voice of reason that said, yeah, he's going to get elected. So for Mike to take that stance, I kind of put some credence into it.
Well, I seldom disagree with Mike, and yep. And I don't necessarily, but I need some sort of evidence that suggests what it is that's going to lead to him resigning.
And if I misunderstood what Mike was trying to convey, all apologies, you know. Multitasking, maybe I misunderstood him, but that's the way I interpreted what he was saying last night.
Well, I mean, don't you think, Steve, that in order for him to resign, there would have to be something that would motivate him to resign?
Right, and knowing
that would
the
be
walls
what?
Are closing, knowing that the walls are closing in on him.
If he resigns, then whatever immunity he has while he's in office is gone. That's a reason to stay.
Yeah, that's true. Jerry's still out if he can pardon himself or not.
Could I weigh in for a second? Hi, everybody.
Yeah, hey, Noble Rick.
Please do.
Yeah, since we're talking about legal stuff, I figured I'd throw my weight
in.
Oh,
man. Thanks for doing so, Rick. Nice to hear you, brother.
Yeah, likewise. Hi, everybody. Yeah, I mean, I've heard that what Trump may do is, if it looks like he's going to be a subject of the of a possible, you know, target of an indictment or whatever, or threatened with an indictment, he may negotiate an immunity deal with Mueller and get out of the presidency that way. But he wouldn't, obviously, he's not going to leave as long as, you know, this threat is hanging over his head. But if it's clear, if it's imminent that, you know, Mueller is going to come out any day and, you know, like list him either as a conspirator or an unindicted conspirator or whatever, that he might at that point negotiate a, you know, an immunity deal. Now, obviously, he can get the same thing with Pence pardoning him if he were to resign, and then, you know, like what happened with Ford pardoning Nixon. But the lesson I think that was learned by the Republicans from that is that really probably cost Ford an election in 76. So I don't know if they want to do it that way. They may want to try doing it a different way this time around. So you know, these investigations take a long time. It takes a long time to talk to all the witnesses, to subpoena all the documents, to analyze the documents, put them in a, you know, chronological order, put them in a, you know, subject matter order, so forth and so on. So, you know, these investigations take years oftentimes. So, you know, as far as him leaving by the end of the year, that might be overly optimistic. I doubt Mueller's, you know, going to be finished by then. We all would like him to be finished by then, because each month of a Trump presidency seems like, you know, what, 12 years or whatever, however often the cicadas come around, you know. But at least that's my take on it.
So then what happens?
I don't know if, anything is going to happen until next year, to tell you the truth.
Well, you know, I can tell you right now, if you're talking about the 2018 midterms, nothing's going to happen there either.
And okay, unless the Democrats take over in the House, you're saying?
No, I mean the Democrats are not going to take over in the House.
Really? Hmm. Because of the gerrymandering.
In part that. Yeah, I mean that's a hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to figure out where there's where there are defeatable Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to have a candidate who will do that. And then you have to have a Democratic Party that actually stands as one and isn't hamstrung by a bunch of assholes standing outside going, yeah, but goddamn, it's not Debbie Wasserman Schultz DNC, goddamn.
Jeez. Yeah, I know.
I mean, progressives need a great big dose of political Adderall right now, you know, kind of to be able to like focus
right
on the problem.
Right. And what is the problem, Bob?
Trump and the Republican Congress are the problems.
Right.
You know, you can get rid of Trump, you get Pence. And then he's a theocratic Taliban Christian nut job, but he also knows how to come in. Well, you know, I was talking to Mother the other day, and she said that we've got to protect the little fetuses.
That's what he calls his wife, right? Mother, right?
Mother.
That is so perverted. Oh God.
That's so Oedipal.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I hear he calls her mother and she calls him Ed. there are problems upon problems upon problems upon problems.
Yeah.
I've been thinking lately about because I have to live inside my own skull. I hypothesized I was thinking about, you know, what would happen if Trump was to resign. Okay? Now any of a couple of other scenarios that wound up removing him from office that weren't impeachment. If he were to resign, and we'll leave the stuff that Steve and I were talking about, you know, aside. If he were to resign, I'm scared to death that the Democrats in Congress would offer the Republicans some sort of conciliatory political hand job and let them take health care away from 30 million people as a condolence.
Exactly. Legislatively, we would be screwed would be able to put anything they wanted. They could
Trump's
jam it
gone
down our
now.
Throats.
Trump's gone now, and we understand that this terribly divisive time is over with, so we're going to work in a bipartisan fashion because you know Democrats are capable of it.
But do you want a lunatic in there that could get us all blowed up? Or somebody that's going to get there and in there and take our health care away and just pass all kind of knuckleheaded legislation that's going to put us back to the 1850s.
Hold the damn phone. Do you think for a minute that in the name of Jesus, Mike Pence wouldn't push the button on North Korea? I mean,
I don't think he's as crazy as Trump. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just too Pollyannish.
He's a Taliban Christian. That one mushroom cloud may be all that's necessary to see Jesus. Yeah, to send the balloon up and send Jesus down in his holy rolls to usher in the end times and tell the Christians they can start gigging Jews.
Good God, these are frightening times.
Well, yeah, they are, and I don't even drink anymore. I can't get away from it. Like I said, I just stare at it with a sort of wide-eyed wonder at the horrifying majesty of it all.
I feel bad for you, Bob. You can't drink. I mean, this is like the most important time in history to be able to drink. I mean, I've been drinking more, and I'm not a drinker, you know?
Can't drink, can't smoke dope, don't drop acid. Nothing.
Fortunately, I got my liver test back, and they're actually better than they were 2 years ago. So I was shocked by that. I thought I'd done cooked my liver since Trump took over. I thought I was going to get. All right, Steve, you got a few months left. You know, just play it out. You know, but
I think you should. I think you should drink to your liver's good health, Steve.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. But I like Bob's first scenario, the one he tabled months ago, better than any of them, in that the Dems take over the House and then they do a double impeachment on Trump and Pence. That's the most sunshiny. Go ahead, Bob.
That wasn't me.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that was me. Hi, everybody. It's Les.
Hey, Les.
Hey, Les. What's going on?
Hey, Les.
Pennsylvania. Route 80 in Pennsylvania. That's what's going on right now. Here's a quick thought on the whole impeachment and resignment of Trump. Is that really a good idea? For all the crap that Trump has done, he hasn't really been able to do really anything to this point. And if he were just to stay in there and just embarrass and kill the Republican Party 1,000 cuts at a time, it might be better than getting somebody like Pence, who's been in government and knows how to work things. If he gets in power, you could kiss everything goodbye. Trump, he'll just keep on embarrassing us to shit. And as far as the A-bomb, who cares? When that pops off, we're all done, so it doesn't matter anyway.
That's an excellent point.
That's a very Sartrean type of viewpoint there, Les.
Well, I grew up in New York, so we were always one of the first targets for the bomb. So to me, I'd rather be right underneath it when it comes in. I don't want to suffer through it. Drill it right in, right on top of me, and let's get it over with.
Yeah.
No, I don't really. I'm not scared of nuclear war or missiles. So what? Who cares?
1850s technology for the next 20 years does not sound like a party to me.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say let me be right. Let me be right in the bullseye of the first target. You know, like how the comedian Ron White, when they were on a small, he said, told a joke about when they're on a small airplane and they lost an engine, and he's yelling up to the pilot, drill this thing right into the ground. I don't want to walk away from this. That's how I feel. Drill it right into the ground. End of story.
That's one way of looking at it.
Well, I was going to say, what? No, not good for anybody else? Just me? Okay.
No, I mean, I don't think any of us are really, really prepared to say what we do or how we would respond in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Even if we could blow one up in the stratosphere, for all my research, the electromagnetic field would shut down all technology for an undetermined amount of time. So it's very bleak, you know. It is very bleak. And I don't mean
I find myself, again, needing to shower with bleach for agreeing with somebody like Steve Bannon. But I didn't, you know, I got no fight to offer on his statement that there is no military solution to North Korea. I mean, General Steve, General Rick, General Charlie, General Les, any of y'all got a military solution to North Korea?
No, sir. My dad fought on over there, so I don't know.
There's not a military solution, and there's really not a diplomatic solution, because there's been an armistice for, what, 60 years now? There's never been a peace treaty. So I think it's just going to kind of, you know, we're going to plod along with the whole Korea thing. I don't think it's going to change any, you know? And they're, you know, whether we like it or not, they're a nuclear state. I mean, they've had nuclear capability now for, what, the last 20 years? They gave it up for a while during the Clinton years. But, you know, they're a nuclear state. They just can't yet launch the, you know, the ICBMs and so forth, you know, to threaten the U.S. But
yet you know, is the key word.
Exactly. But, I mean, if they're a nuclear state, I mean, they're not going to give up their nuclear weapons, because the regime's survival depends upon the deterrent threat that a nuclear weapon represents to deter an attack on Korea by, let's say, the U.S.
Or China, for that matter.
Well, yeah, I don't know about China attacking North Korea. You really think they would attack North Korea, Bob?
If North Korea did something stupid enough, yeah.
Yeah, but the problem is China doesn't want that, because then that would cause, you know, a huge refugee problem, and they'd all be going to China, the North Koreans, you know? And that's really, you know, that's why China wants to just keep the regime in there and keep things stable, because, you know, at least they know
right.
What
well,
they got.
Well, China has better, China has better sense than we did. I mean, remember when Pappy Bush decided not to march on Baghdad and remove Saddam because the smart people around him said, George, you know, that's not such a great idea, because it would destabilize the entire region and turn it into a mess.
Yep.
And he agreed with him, and then Dim Sun came along and said, "Thuck Saddam, we're taking him out." And now the entire region is in a complete and chaotic mess. Well, China's got enough sense not to want to. I mean, I'm sure, look, China is a capitalist enterprise now, okay? There's nothing communist left about China. It's pure authoritarian. It's capitalism with an authoritarian overlay, all right? It's not a command economy. It's a demand. It's a capitalist economy. So they can't be happy having that kind of stupidity to their immediate south. You know, the Korean Peninsula just hanging off the Chinese mainland, waiting to go nuts. They would, you know, the Chinese would actually far prefer to have control of the entire Korean Peninsula, but it's not worth the war it would take to do that right now. Okay,
yeah.
They want to continue their economic growth.
They're very pragmatic, unlike us, Bob. You know, we should learn a thing or two from the Chinese, you know, because while we've been busy fighting all these wars for like the last 10 or 15 years, they've been slowly building their economic power, which is now translating into, you know, a more diplomatic and military power,
right,
as well.
And they can be more militarily muscular, sure. They've still got like one aircraft carrier.
Right.
Yeah, but they got the United States in hock to them for how many trillions of dollars? So at any given time, it's our
dollar.
Pay us that money and give us those aircraft carriers.
Less, it's still our dollar. As long as you're running on your own sovereign currency, you maintain a considerable amount of power over anybody who invests in your country. And the last thing the Chinese want to do is destabilize the dollar, because we'll take them with us, better than any atomic or nuclear weapon.
You think?
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't just call in that loan and turn us into Greece?
No, hell no. Never in a million years.
The United States is the ground floor of this pyramid. Don't forget that. Everything else depends on our dollar for
Greece. Yeah, Greece doesn't have it. That's why when all the right wingers were hooting and puking about, that Obama's going to turn us into Greece. Bullshit. Greece doesn't have its own currency. There was a strong argument to be made that had Greece returned to the drachma, Greece could have more easily righted itself. But along the way, it also probably would have gone a long way toward crashing the euro.
Mm-hmm. But what is the underpinnings of the United States dollar being so strong? Is it not that the world trades oil?
Hey, Les, brother, you're breaking up something. You're breaking up something fierce. You know, the underpinning of the strength of the dollar is the stability of the American system, coupled with the fact that we have constitutional guarantees of the full faith and credit of American debt. And I'm off in a bit of a weedy patch here because this is not my strong suit. But I do know enough to know that it would take a hell of a lot of leverage to crash the dollar. Now China's on a path to being larger economically than us within the next few years. But that still won't necessarily convey the ability to economically put us at hazard. You know, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish talking.
Well, you're breaking up kind of badly. Laurel chimed in just a minute ago. Laurel, you want to go for a sec?
Hey, no problem. I'm just planning my own eclipse trip here. Probably making some last minute adjustments.
God Almighty, what are you going to Nebraska or something?
Nebraska's looking a little bit more cloudier than I would like, so I'm thinking maybe somewhere like Wyoming or somewhere down by, St. Louis or Nashville. I don't know. I've never been down in that part of the country down by Nashville before. So.
I'll tell you this much. For a drive that long, unless you've already got a hotel room, you best not go.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
I realize. It's, Wisconsin,
just sleep in your car, man.
Yeah,
just sleeping in your car.
I'm not beyond roughing it.
Your car. Huh?
No, I'm not beyond roughing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, or camp.
Yeah.
You know?
Already got a tent in my trunk, so.
Yeah,
gotta have somewhere to pitch it.
Okay. Yep.
I'd given thought to going
to that or Wyoming.
What about Oregon? Is it gonna be cloudy there?
It's cloudy, and they've got wildfires going on out there, too, so it's going to be pretty smoky as well.
Oh, that's not good.
Mm. But either Wyoming or Idaho look somewhat favorable.
Hmm.
But, just...
I may have to say I did it on that one. We'll see.
Yeah, I crossed my fingers that the weather cooperates somewhat closer nearby in the next 48 hours. Crossing my fingers that my bowels start behaving themselves. I've had this... irritable bowels.
TMI.
Oh, I know. It's not the thing you want to be doing when you're in the middle of planning a big trip, but
it's an awful affliction, though, Bob, and I feel for the guy. I know. You do too.
So do I. But, I can hear people turn away because because this will quickly, it happens here. We'll take the program straight into the gutter, and that'll be the end of things.
It's dinner time, folks. We got to be respectful of people who are cooking their dinners, right?
10-4, okay.
I'll just focus on saving the virgins from sacrifice, so I'll keep my cause noble.
The weather forecast I'm looking at says that the best weather is in the west, and the least amount of good weather is in the east.
Yeah, I've got one of my sisters Facebook at me basically yelling, Casper, Casper, go to Casper, and it's not a bad option. I mean, like I said, it's one of those things where I might not even make a final decision till I'm, backing out of my driveway, it's just, it's one of these once in a lifetime things, and, you know, granted, 2024 may only be only 7 years. There ain't no guarantees with what's going on in this world that I'll get to 2024, or that by 2024, a trip to the eclipse path might not be more difficult than the trip to the moon itself. So,
well,
you know, I don't want to miss this.
I saw one when I was in like second grade, so I've got that going for me, which is good. That may have been the last total eclipse that was visible across the U.S.
I think I was 79, Bob. That's what I've read.
Yeah, no. I was it's like 71, 72.
Wow. Okay.
No, there was one on March 7th, 1970, exactly a year before I was born. I was born
okay.
March 7th, 71.
Then I was in first grade.
Yep. It was exactly a year before my birthday. It went up from, like, Florida up the East Coast or something like that. But there was one that went through Montana, Oregon, or Washington State, Montana, and up into Winnipeg, because Winnipeg had one in 79. I remember that.
Yeah, I think there was one in like 1989 or something when I first started working for the government, because I went outside and everybody was looking at it, and you know, saw the, you know, had the, you know, the offset so you could kind of see the moon coming in front of the sun, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
The
we've had partial eclipses. I remember seeing partial eclipses.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that was a partial eclipse.
There hasn't been anything total in the United States since 1979. That's the last total one.
Yeah. Yeah, and the next total one is 2024. Where is that going to be visible from?
It goes up through Mexico into Texas, and from Texas it goes all the way up to Maine. That one's a bit of a longer duration eclipse, where I think this one next week is probably 2 minutes 40 seconds or so.
Yeah.
I think the next one's going to be in the neighborhood of four to 5 minutes.
Well, by the way, a couple of things, because we're 9 minutes before the hour and we're still $380 away from finishing the week even. I can say that thanks to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy, the $15 challenge that was on the table from Steve from New York has been added to by another $20. So there's a $35 challenge on the table to get us started, which will get us down to, if it's met, will get us down to $310. And that would be huge. So anybody that wants to help out along the because, you know, hell, paid bills before I left, got bills to pay coming home. And it would be nice to pay them. And there's a couple of them because they happen monthly, and you can't get out in front of them.
Let's do this, folks. We got to keep Bob on the air. I mean, I can't stress how important this is. We're losing progressive voices daily. We can't afford to lose Bob, so please help out if you can. Even $5, you know, anything, you know, beats a zero. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, and I appreciate that, Steve. I really, really do, because you know, having to turn on the reverb and call Lassie come, you know, at the beginning of the week and on Monday, and just crawling over the halfway mark of the month here, that's it's not hopeful, not helpful. You know, the power's not going to go out for a while. Hopefully, the internet. Well, got to pay the internet bill. Got to pay a bunch of bills. But you know, keep our fingers crossed. But yeah, if we can knock down the $380, it'd be really helpful. I want to share an email real quick from Ron in Raleigh, because it's just chock-a-block with common sense. Subject line, why worry? The DPRK has had 5 nuclear tests since 2006, the largest of which was about 30 kilotons. We've got tactical nukes bigger than that. Send those folks some food and fuel in the winter, pretend they're a world power, and stop rattling sabers at this third world country. And see, you know how I know that makes sense? Because it's probably something that the vast majority, that Emory and Marveline don't want to. By God, we got to show that, them little bastards who's boss here. That's what we got to do, Marveline. Oh, Emory, I love it when you talk tough like that. Let's leave the living room here for a little bit. Here, come on over onto the Barca Lounger, honey. But really. I got the sense while I was gone that this country was collectively shitting ourselves over the fact that, they said they were going to launch a missile at Guam. Now, this is not me selling the Guamians out. But it didn't help that the governor of Guam said, Donald Trump is such an awesome leader, I want to lick his ballsack. No, that didn't help. And he didn't say the part about the ballsack. But, you know, he's a tough leader and he's standing up to him. Oh, great. You know, I mean, that's like, I don't know. That's like a dinosaur standing up to a lizard. A little one. A salamander. This is the idea of a nuclear confrontation with North Korea is simply asinine. Or maybe I'm just too much of a peacenik.
And when you say asinine, do you mean you don't think it's going to happen in your wildest dreams?
No. Donald Trump is certainly crazy enough to do it. Don't get me wrong. But it would be monumentally stupid if we did. Frankly, the question is, do I think North Korea will do anything? And the answer is no. No, I don't think North Korea will do anything. I don't.
You know,
there's too much experience of sitting there, you know, watching all these, you know, Lindsey Graham peeking out from under the fainting couch and saying, "I swear, I'm pretty sure the Ayatollah is gonna nuke Spartanburg day after tomorrow if he can only get a weapon." Help me, John. Get me a Darvon and a mint julep. John.
I found myself in the middle of one of those conversations about North Korea in a gas station one night. Somebody was ranting about how North Korea needs to be taken down. It's like there was a big old global map advertising beer on the door. It's like, can you find it on a map? If you can, then go ahead and go there and nuke it. You know? Most of these people who are talking shit about North Korea can't even find it on a map.
Well, what concerns me is they do have a very sophisticated underground infrastructure. Probably one of the most sophisticated underground infrastructures on the planet. So they've been planning for this shit a lot longer than we have.
Yeah.
But that's because their whole existence is warfare. Right. We've got a little bit more than just, you know, dropping bombs to pass the time around here. You know, that comes with, you know, kind of the benefits of being an actual full-fledged country and not just being some hermit kingdom.
I hear you, brother, and I appreciate what you're saying. It's just...
Oh, it's like Labor Man in the chat room just says, Bob, are you saying Kim Un crazy ain't crazy?
Madder than a hatter, Bob. Come on.
No, really, Steve. I don't believe that. And even if he's mad, he's not stupid.
Maybe we could send Dennis Rodman over there to...
Yeah, you know, maybe, because he won't feed his people, and you do get into situations with totalitarian autocracies where the people cannot rise up, which I think is this. You know, there's no Free North Korea Liberation Front or Free Front for the Liberation of North Korea or the Popular Front for North Korean Freedom Splitters. There's none of that over there, I don't think. Because they just kill people like that. But, if you study the history of it, the whole history of why there's a North and South Korea is a function of post-World War II stupidity.
Well, how old was that high and noble prince of Saudi Arabia when he died? 90-something? You know, how old was Khomeini in Tehran when he died? Like 90-something? These people know how to hold on to power for a long time. And they don't hold on to power for a long time by doing stupid, rash things.
And they don't hold on to power by doing democracy either.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Really, all you can do is maintain a sort of stasis or a status quo with regard to that country. South Korea cruises along. They're, you know, South Korea is an interesting study right now, too, simply because they're having some democratic convulsions over monumental amounts of political corruption. And it seems to be pulling in the entire corporate overlord superstructure, because everybody had their corrupt little mitts in the trough. And apparently, if you read the international press, the current president's but the people are unhappy, and he's trying to get because he what am I saying? He's trying to clean things up a little bit. And
well, I'm
and they don't want shit going sideways.
No. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to leave this conversation early, but I'm going to leave this conversation on a good note. I'm about ready to watch our local boys from Sioux Falls, South Dakota play in the Little League World Series. First time they've ever made it, and I'm really proud of these kids. I know a couple of their parents, they stopped their regulars at the casino, and, you know, I want to see these kids do, you know, do their best. So,
well, good luck.
Tune out here and watch the game, so.
All right, take care. Take care, Laurel. Bye now. Best of Little Thunder. Good news. Good news. We cracked the $300 mark. Thanks to Ralphs and Kay. They met Steve and the Steve Challenge. They met the Steve Challenge. And we now are at $290 to go for fundraising to finish the week. It would be great if we could do that and keep the ball rolling. Thank you kindly, very kindly. To Kay in California, and thank you also to Ralphs. Thank you so very, very much. Let's see, we haven't heard John in Central PA's in the room. Haven't heard from John. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
I'm here, and I'm tanned, and well, no, I'm not tanned. I'm not even reasonably sunburned, but I'm rested and I'm ready.
I'm glad you had a good time.
It was all too short and all too harried, but we did. We had a lot of fun.
I've never been to the American South. I mean, the farthest south I've been to West Virginia a few times, maybe two or three times.
Then you have not been to the South.
Right, and I've been to, like, Northern Virginia, you know, like right outside of, like, right at Blacksburg.
Blacksburg's into the southern part of Virginia. I mean, that's a couple of hours from here. That's the South. There's the South, and then there's the Deep South.
Right, and I've never been down there. I would love to go down there. The only states I've really been to outside of Pennsylvania was Maryland and Delaware, New Jersey once or twice, New York once, and that's it.
One good way to know you're in the Deep South is when you get to the place where they're selling boiled peanuts on the side of the road.
Oh, really?
And not just in the convenience stores.
Wow.
And they still do that? Oh, yeah. There'll be a kettle there steaming, boiling, you know, and they're blistering. Maybe they'll have some that are already bagged up on ice, getting cool. I like them when they're warm. I like the I like the spicy ones too.
Love me some boiled peanuts. Bob.
Yeah, see, and in a minute, I'll start getting emails from the other parts of the country going, "You people are crazy, boiled peanuts. Who ever heard of such a thing?"
I never heard of that.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're soft. Because remember, a peanut is not a nut.
I never had it.
A peanut is a bean.
It's food crack. It's food crack. It really is, man.
Nice. I should have some sometime when I go down there, because I've never even heard of that. It does sound good.
Well, the correct way is to take green peanuts. Not everybody does this, but the correct way is to take green peanuts, boil them for about 12 hours in a saltwater brine. And, oh, my gosh. I mean.
But make no mistake, it's got to be a briny-ass brine. It can't be any little pathetic.
No.
It's got to be it's got to be brinier than ocean water.
You're talking 2 cups to every 2 gallons, probably, of salt.
I'd say 2 cups to a gallon.
Yeah, even, well, I was,
Because
I don't
because,
want anybody to have a stroke or
well,
anything.
Well, no. The thing is, I mean, the peanuts, the raw peanuts are a sealed unit.
Right.
And the reason you got to boil them for so long is the water in the brine has to completely soak the shell and reach in to the peanut.
If you have a pressure cooker and you're in a hurry, you can get them done quicker that way. So.
And anybody who's ever sat at a ballpark and ordered a package of so-called salted in the shell peanuts, how do you suppose they get salted in the shell?
By boiling them?
Yeah.
Huh.
Or by soaking them in brine and then drying them.
But yeah, but they are good. Anybody that's ever tried them that hasn't tried them are like, oh my God. And they go back for more.
You know, I got to thinking, I bet you could, you know what would be good? Because, you know, again, it wasn't all politics driving down there because Agnes would have just made me turn around and come home.
Right.
But I got to thinking, what if, okay, the thing about boiled peanuts is you got to shell them. And it's like peeling shrimp. You know, there's two philosophies. Peel them, you know, shell the peanuts, eat the two peanuts, shell another. Or you know, peel the shrimp, eat the shrimp, peel another shrimp. Or there's shell a whole bunch or peel a whole bunch and then go to town. And for the longest time, I didn't have the patience for the peel a bunch. But I finally developed it. And I can tell you it's much more satisfying that way. But I got to thinking,
yeah.
if you were to shell a bunch of boiled peanuts and kind of crush them a little bit and work them and say like work them into guacamole or work them into a good salsa, holy cow, that would be good. It would have to be.
Bob, I think we may just have discovered our next business adventure. So
stay
tuned.
Yeah, it would be so good. Let's see. Big news coming in. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Darlene has put a $100 challenge on the table to put a dent in the remaining $290. She says, thanks for all you do, Bob. Thank you, Darlene, for being there. And you know, it's nothing I do. It's the community. It's the conversation we have. That's what I think this is all about. But so there's $100 on the table. If people 10 at a time or 20 at a time or 100 at a time will match that, then we'll only have $90 to go to finish the week to the good. So we'll run downhill for the next 53 minutes. Can we stand just a little bit more food porn? People? Group?
Fire away, Bob.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Because, oh, it was there.
Yes, please.
First of all, you know, shrimp, plain and simple, just boiled shrimp. Dear God. And a shrimp boil, and we had a boil to go with it with the potatoes and the corn. Oh, yummy. Because I just prefer shrimp out of the Gulf, and it was absolutely delicious. Straight out of, for those of you who are familiar with Forrest Gump, the shrimp was straight off a boat out of Bayou La Batre, and that's Batre. And if we've got any listeners in La Belle France, they're having conniptions and probably throwing baguettes at the speaker right now, because it's Batre, Bayou La Batre. Kind of like Cairo, Illinois is Cairo. The gut tolerated things very, very well. I was very good, and so no real happy. But like I said, that thing what I mentioned to Todd last night, the one entree that Agnes had at a little restaurant looking out on Mobile Bay, a pair of two slices of fried green tomato with a mostly crab meat, not much in the way of binder, crab cake stacked on top of it, and Kaneka sausage cream sauce over the lot of it. I could have cried. It was too beautiful. It was too beautiful to I took pictures. I put it on Facebook.
You're killing me, Bob. Even that doesn't do it justice. I mean, unless you can actually sample something like that, you don't realize the culinary brilliance.
Well, I'm gonna try it. I got to try to recreate it, and I'm hanging on to a package of Kaneka so I can do that because I brought back Kaneka.
Did you warm up to the chef? And maybe if you had bought him a drink or two, he would have gave you the recipe to that.
No, there's no recipe. I mean, I know what it was.
Okay, you got this.
Yeah, I got the fried green tomato part. The crab cake part was probably proprietary to them, but I got a pretty good idea of what it was, too. Also, at the same place, I had a half a dozen roasted oysters, again, fresh out of the Gulf. And they were garlic butter and freshly grated Romano cheese and just set on top of the grill until they bubbled and the cheese melted. Oh! Heavenly. Just unspeakably delicious. And again, if you can get fresh oysters, that's doable wherever you can get fresh oysters. Wow. Just, oh. But probably the homiest and most satisfying, let's see, what day was it? It was Wednesday. It was Wednesday while we were gone. I decided that while we were down there, since Agnes had never seen New Orleans, that, you know, it's only a couple of hours away. So away we went.
Were you in Florida?
No, I was in Alabama.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, just shot across I-10 there, across Mississippi. Boom, you're in. And so we got there and we took the road down to before you even get to New Orleans. We took a road down to take us to the Battle of New Orleans site. And there's a nice little museum there, and the site's not that big, but you know the rampart that Andrew Jackson's American forces, which was a polyglot mixture of, there was Pushmataha, who was a Choctaw chieftain, brought some people, some American frontiersmen came down from Kentucky and Tennessee in rags. By the time they got there, the people of New Orleans threw their resources together to, feed them, clothe them, provide them with something passing for housing. I mean, this is December of 1814, so and it gets cold down there that time, and it's the wet cold. Anybody who's ever been, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, freezing north, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. No, this is just a bone chilling, you can't get warm kind of cold. By January of 1815, the battle takes place. Jackson absolutely, with his forces, routs the British because, and the general Peckham, who was in charge of the British forces, was actually a veteran of the Napoleonic Wars. And he marched his forces right into a rampart with a whole bunch of cannons behind him, and just got them chewed to pieces. Being as how a whole bunch of the people who came down to defend were, who came down from Appalachia to defend were Scots-Irish, Peckham marched the 93rd Scots South Highlanders right into the teeth of the guns and got them just slaughtered. And then when shit was going sideways, he rode up trying to be a good British officer and rally the troops and got himself killed. And it was all apparently after the treaty ending the war had been signed or had been agreed to. But had the British gotten hold of New Orleans, they could have strangled trade, you know, up the Mississippi. And it was there that I got the call from MSNBC. You asked me about that, Steve. I was literally standing on the Battle of New Orleans battlefield. And they called and said, you know, can you talk about the opioid crisis tonight? And I said, absolutely. Well, I asked Agnes first. I said, it's vacation. She said, should I tell them no? And she said, no, you absolutely can't tell them no. Tell them yes.
That's awesome. And people are probably under the misconception that you get a big old fat check for that. You don't, do you, Bob?
Not a dime.
Not a dime. And there's no way you could advertise the horn either. They wouldn't even let you do that, would they?
Well, I mean, they mentioned, you know, that I'm the host of Head On with Bob Kincaid, as far as I know. It's on the font or something.
I was just so proud to see you there, you know, and it took me back. You know?
Well, what blew my mind is I got in a nice dig at Comrade Kumquat. For his, you know, for basically doing his Nancy Reagan impression. And lo and behold, the very next day after that segment, he did an about face, and where before he had refused to declare a state of emergency over opioids, the very next day he did an about face and said, oh yeah, we're definitely going to have a state of emergency. So the little bastard is actually sitting there watching Chris Hayes every night.
You know he is. And he was watching you. I don't know how that makes you feel or not. But the way you articulated that was just, it was brilliant. It really was. You know, you said there are people out there that need these medications, but it is a crisis because there are people out there that don't. And they're just, they've got us in this.
Well, we're being hung out to dry, Steve.
Right.
And anybody who wants to kill Medicaid and eliminate the Affordable Care Act is saying that he wants to make the opioid crisis worse. There's no getting around that. Oh, and by the way, one other thing. You know how we joke about, you know, we'll round, you know, when it's like 32 people at $2.12 and a half cents, and I say we'll round up and call it 213, we'll save the half a penny, and we'll put it toward the Maybach maintenance. And we joke about the Gulfstream 5 garage hangar and everything. they sent a car for me, which is typical. I mean, they did. They sent a car for me.
Really? Was it a limo? Or?
Oh, what a car it was.
Really? Did it have like a bar where you could...
No. It wasn't one of those tacky-ass... It wasn't one of those tacky-ass stretch things.
I've been wanting to hear all about this, man.
No, they sent a BMW 735i.
Nice.
And I mean, nice. There was room enough for a rodeo in that son of a bitch.
After the Nissan, you felt you were in Bob heaven, huh?
Oh, I stretched my legs out. Hoo-wee!
But you did such a great job the way you balanced, you know, people that really need these medications, people that are abusing them and need help. I've never been more proud of you. And I don't mean to sound like I'm waving the Bob flag or anything. I mean,
wave it. Go ahead. I'm not gonna beat you up for it.
Well, what about the war on drugs, though? We've been fighting that for what, 4-5 decades now. What do we have as a result?
Is more,
you know, addictions than pretty much ever before. I'm sure in this country, so since the war on drugs started, you know what I mean? Like, I guarantee that it has peaked. Drug abuse has peaked right now. Or maybe not even peaked. It's just getting higher since the war on drugs started. And, I mean, I'm one of those people that, you know, agrees with these libertarian types that say we need to end the war on drugs. Because I think it isn't working. And there's other places in the country, too. And I know this is a tired talking point, but it's true. I mean, like, out in Portugal or wherever it was, they legalized all the drugs and regulated it, and the result was the addiction rate went way down.
Well, friend, what did alcohol get us? The Tommy gun and the mob. I mean, prohibition does not work. It does not work.
Oh, and by the way, let me interrupt and just say I misspoke. It was not a 735; it was a 750. BMW 750.
Well, I Oh, BMW 750
for the cool, well, cool for the cool cool price of $100,000.
I have that interview, Bob. If you would like, I could post it in the chat room again.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great if people want to see it. I haven't seen it. But
it's awesome.
It was neat. They picked us up at the hotel. Picked me up at the hotel. Agnes, I asked her if she wanted to go. No, she didn't. And took me to a little TV production studio over in the French Quarter, on St. Philip Street, right across the street from Louis Armstrong Park. And it was just a wonderful experience. And yeah, I really stretched the back seat of that thing. I stretched my legs out more than they had been stretched out in several days after that godforsaken Nissan Sentra, which I know rubs you the wrong way, but you know, suffer quietly, Steve.
I have a Toyota.
My lips are sealed.
I have a Toyota and I love it, man. It's a Tundra though, but you know, the full size truck. But you know, Toyotas have been really good to me.
John, it wasn't a bad car. It's a tiny car.
I actually don't like Nissans.
I brained myself getting into it, and that ruined the beginning experience. There was no way to get I felt like I was driving with my knees. It was like sitting in a chair with your knees, you know, straight down flat on, and your feet flat on the floor.
Well, I'm only 5'7", so I don't have that problem, I guess.
And the seat was like sitting on a paint bucket. So,
right.
Yeah, that was that problem.
Last night.
Somebody tried to jump in. What?
No, I was gonna say something real quick. That same car that you were talking about, 750. I almost got one of those when we went to a place called Off Lease in Florida to get what we now have is the Volt. But on the way to where the Volt was parked on a lot, you had to walk down this long row of BMWs. So, of course, I had to go take a look. Just got out, you know, just lost ours, so I had to go take a look at it. And open up the door, and there's no gauges. And as the door opens up, the screen just lights up BMW, and then the gauge is filling from the look. I said, God damn, I want this car. And I looked at the back window. It was a 2014, $64,000. That's why I got a Chevy Volt.
Hey, oh yeah.
Wow, $64,000.
Yeah, and here's the funny thing, that particular company had three of those BMW 750s,
mm-hmm.
and two of them were out of commission because New Orleans had flooded a couple of days before because the. Not the pumps for the levees and the hurricanes, but just the ordinary everyday pumps for the ordinary everyday thunderstorms. They got 10 inches of rain in like 2 hours, and those pumps failed. And for some reason or another, so the driver was telling me that on the European versions of that car, the air intakes are up high, up top. But for some reason or another, on the American versions, the air intakes are down low. So two of those things got caught in the floods and sucked and just sucked flood water straight into the engine.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, he said the early estimates that it was going to be something on the order of $23,000 per car.
Wow.
Which sounds like pretty much new engine to me.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get...
That's salt water, right?
It's brackish. I mean, it's flood water. It's mostly fresh, but, you know. But mm-hmm. water is water.
Yeah.
And we're you know, sucking it into the combustion chamber is concerned.
Yeah.
So if George Soros ever does start writing the checks and we, you know, I probably won't be getting the 750 because of that air intake problem. I'll probably still go until
slide down to the used car lot, grab the used 330 XI off the lot for about $7,000. You get about 3 years out of it.
Right. Yeah.
or but I mean, if we're talking about George Soros, I mean, we'll go with the Maybach or maybe the oh screw it, just get a 911. I mean, if you're going to be in a tiny little car, at least that thing won't leave you feeling as beat up as that goddamn Sentra did.
Really, that doesn't have a hard suspension.
No, it does, but it was, I mean, it wasn't just the suspension. It was just a supremely uncomfortable car because the nice thing about a 911 is I can stretch my legs all the way out in that. Just not in that little Sentra. I felt like you know how the NASCAR drivers, you know, drive right up on top of the steering wheel where they can, you know, they can stick their chin out and touch the steering wheel, and their elbows are tight against their rib cages, and you know, they're not stretched out, and you know, get them, Dale. But
I'm not going to argue with you anymore over the century. Karen has been a work pull at where she works with the post office over 200 entries. So if we hit, you will not have to worry about sentries.
Just to be spiteful, you'll hey, what's that in the driveway? Oh, Steve sent you a Sentra.
No, I'll put you in the biggest SUV puffy car available, Cadillac, you name it.
Oh, I tell you what, you talk about roomy. I rode in one while I was down there. A brand new Chevy Tahoe. Jesus Christ, that thing's a house. And a big old V8 engine, and you know, for a big old V8 engine, 25 miles a gallon on the highway ain't shabby.
See, I've got a Sentry though, Bob, and that's what I have a hard time wrapping my head around. I'm not, what are you, 6'8"? Is that what you said you were?
No, I'm 6'2".
All right, well, I'm 5'11", and I've got a foot of headroom. That's why I think there was something
wasn't the headroom, it was the legroom. And you can't, and unless you've got the power seat, you can't raise the front of the seat up, the bolster.
Okay.
So it was just my ass on the same level as my thighs, and couldn't
mine
get,
has the power seat.
And
okay.
Couldn't get
okay.
Far enough back.
Mine has the power seat. That would explain it. The person that sits behind you, they're very uncomfortable, but it will go.
And I just got a note from Ron in Raleigh saying, I'm driving a 1994 B13 Sentra. I'm 6'3". I enjoy the peppy 1.6-liter dual overhead cam engine. Just remember, no base models. They make a Nismo version of the new Sentra. This was not that, Ron. This was the SV configuration.
That would be a sedan. What year was it, Bob?
Oh, it was a 16 or a 17. I mean, had 25,000 miles on it when we started.
I believe you, but and those folks and all their infinite wisdom, it's just, it sucks that they don't accommodate, you know, tall people.
Well, I mean, sucks. I had all the, I mean, I could have worn a cowboy hat in the goddamn thing. But you know, that wasn't the problem. It was the just being, you know, squished.
And the space wasn't big enough for you.
Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of room widthwise because I'm not that broad across the beam. But my dad has the same problem. Yeah, my height's all in my legs.
Right.
Did you try lifting the steering wheel up? Did they have like a thing, a lever to lift the steering wheel up and push it in and out?
Yeah, I meant to mention.
Oh yeah,
that
no,
too,
I did
Bob.
That. I found that.
That has an adjustable steering, but it's hidden.
No, I found that right away. I mean, because otherwise I would have been, I would have been like a Harley rider on a chopper with the ape hanger handlebars. That would have been unbearable.
$500 would have been better for you.
But for $10 extra, the alternative I had was a Ford Fusion Hybrid. And it wasn't much bigger than the Sentra.
You had the same problem. You should ask for a Ford 500 or something. You know how they're bigger sedans.
Well, that's another $10. So you know, the next time we do this, I know I'm going to have to go. I know I'm going to have to go at the $60 a day level. Because that Sentra was $40 a day.
Or hopefully they'll be out of all the economy levels and they'll comp you.
Well, see, that's what's nice. Or, yeah.
Yeah. I've had that happen.
I got a barrel like that one time. That was the best rental I've ever had.
What was it?
Camaro.
Oh.
Chevy Camaro?
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't the Camaro on the inside. It was the Camaro on the outside. It had the six-cylinder, but God, that car. Every toll plaza we left out there, man, it was like we're trying to get the V1 takeoff speed.
Well, Ferg and I had a Dodge Charger with a six-cylinder engine in it a few years ago. That wasn't shabby.
No, it's not. It's not, which only makes me wonder, like, what does the V8 turbocharged feel like? If this feels this good.
Well, there's a Dodge Jeep lot over in Summersville that I wander around on every now and then. And they've got one of those Charger Hellcats on there right now on the lot. Can you imagine dropping $70,000 on a Dodge?
For that Dodge?
Well, I mean, it's going to be hugely powerful, but it's not going to hold together. It'll fall apart in a few years.
Yeah.
But my God, you know.
I think at $70,000, I'm looking to buy a plane. I can't even justify that kind of money on the car.
But then again, across the street at the Chevy lot, they got $70,000 Suburbans.
Yeah. That's the diesel one with the Allison tranny, right?
Like, no. No, that's just the V8 gas engine with you know, like air conditioned seats, heated seats, endangered species wood paneling, elephants, you know, elephant hide steering wheel. It ridiculous.
Yeah. Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Nathan Bedford Forrest last night. I'm related to that guy, like a couple generations down, like because I have the same last name and everything.
Sorry, I suggested he should have been hanged. My bad.
Oh no! Like, dude, I'm right with you. I mean,
no, he absolutely should have been hanged.
Yeah, I mean, they all should have. And what things that he did was, see, the only reason why he was general is because he was so damn rich. And he raised, you know, an army, and it was the people that he knew went in the frontier and shit. So that's how he got to rise to all the way up to the lieutenant general rank for the cavalry in the Western theater. But I'm not proud of it or anything. I'm just, it's interesting, you know, like, and yeah, so I don't know. But what else do you know about?
I remember the beginning of Forrest Gump. He describes that he was named Forrest after his daddy, who was named after General Nathan Bedford Forrest. But he was named after his daddy, Forrest Gump, who died when a big old sack of bananas fell on him down to the docks in Mobile.
But did you ever read the Forrest Gump book?
Oh, yeah. The movie, it makes me angry to watch the movie. It's such a disgusting bastardization of the book.
Did they mention Nathan Bedford Forrest in the book?
I don't. Oh, yeah. It's in the book. Yeah.
It's that's crazy. He's probably my great, 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 great uncle. He was my great great grandfather was his favorite kid brother. That he was like 17 when when he was born, when their father ran right around the time their father died. So I mean, it's not even that many generations down. It's I even have some of the, you know, facial like dark hair like complexions and some of the dark hair like the you know how he had real dark hair.
Oh, yeah.
I have that and everything. Yeah, it's. But yeah, it's really interesting. I'm not proud of that or anything. You know, it's I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. You know, so I'm not even from the Confederacy or anything. But like I said, I'd like to visit it sometime. But I want to transcend into what happened last Friday. And see this is kind of where things start to go from covert fascism just straight up overt fascism. Like, they're not even making any bones about it anymore. I even saw an article about the Justice Department is serving warrants to like 1.3 million internet users or something like that from a anti-Trump site.
Yeah, and that's the Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III Justice Department, and they're going on that fishing expedition in an effort to prosecute the people who not just the ordinary folks who showed up and, you know, gave him the finger or whatever, but the Black Bloc folks who did their Black Bloc thing. And so they're trying to cast a wide net and get as many people as possible. And it's chilling and it's frightening and it's wrong.
Absolutely. It's what they would call un-American, because it is. And this, I think it was you. Yeah, it was either you or Malloy that was saying about how he wants to be the closest thing to royalty.
Yeah, that was me. We don't have royalty, but he wants as close to it as he can get. Absolutely.
And you know, there was talks about. I saw Tony Schwartz talking about, you know, his biographer. He was talking about how he thinks Trump's going to resign soon and shit. That's all bullshit. I mean, it is. He's not going to resign, and he's not going to get kicked out of the presidency, and we're just going to have to put up with this kind of shit for the next 4 or 8 years, and more than that even. I mean, did you see that poll about how 52% of Republicans want to postpone the 2020 election? Was that real, or was that satire?
I don't. Well, look, 8 out of 10 Republicans still support him. That kind of, yep. I mean, kind of gives you a sense of the scope of the problem. And as far as Bannon's concerned, you know, Jake Tapper had a really good take this afternoon, because he did it with a list. And he said, you know, while everybody's out there hooting because they think they've nailed Steve Bannon's pelt to the wall, Steve Bannon wasn't on board when he was calling Mexicans rapists. Steve Bannon was nowhere near him back when he was talking to Billy Bush and said, grab him by the pussy. Okay. Steve Bannon didn't make him who he is. Racist is what Donald Trump is, all by himself with no damn help.
Look at the birther thing. The birther thing is so obvious that was like. Remember when that was going on, and nobody knew that he was going to run for president, of course, at the time, really, and you know, or at least nobody thought he would get anywhere. And they thought he was just teasing. Like when he did talk about it back then. Like back in 2012, I guess it was, he like everybody knew, even Republicans, that it was a racist thing, the birther thing. The Black Republicans and stuff, they all knew it was a racist thing. Like look at Colin Powell, a perfect example of what he said about it. He even said it was racist. You know, everybody knew what it was. How can he say he's not a racist, man? All these guys, that's a very significant thing. That's a milestone when a Black guy becomes president in America. You know what I mean? And they don't like that, I guess. Well, because look at the way they're treating him.
The only thing Donald Trump is the Republicans, what they say behind in the closed room behind the doors. Donald Trump is just that out loud with a bullhorn. That's exactly what they think. They just had the discipline to shut up about it in public, and he doesn't. But they're exactly the same. There's no difference between them.
Nope. You know, and I don't know. I don't think he's going to be removed from office, is what I'm trying to say. Everybody thinks he will. I just highly doubt it.
Nope. We have to be real about it. It's better off that he stays there, because if Pence gets in, like I was saying earlier, Pence has the ability to really screw us good.
Well, I personally think where we are right now, it would be far the most important thing we can try to do, if Democrats can get their shit together, which I would not run out to Harris and place a bet on, is to get the House back. But
well, they're saying they want to censor Trump. Here's the problem with censoring Trump.
Okay, wait. One thing. It's just a language thing, and I'm not gooning on you or anything. They want to censure, C-E-N-S-U-R-E, not censor. To censor is to keep someone from speaking. To censure is to publicly criticize and call out and call down. So, just so we know.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is, okay, I didn't catch that. That's probably pretty bad, but, you know, they're trying to play up. Republicans are trying to play up this thing where they're doing economic populism. You know, they're doing that kind of pandering right now, and the Democrats need to keep up with that. And it's just gonna fuel them more. It's not gonna. It's probably just gonna galvanize his base. So.
Well, yeah, and they'll probably do really mean, shitty things. But that's the thing. Mueller is still working. And I had that story last night from one of Trump's sleazy little former business partners who said, yeah, I'm going to prison and Trump's going with me.
See, I don't believe all that, though. I just don't, because nothing has ever happened yet. You know, and it's just there seems like there's nothing that can bring him down. But for all we know, they're going to come out and say, oh, hey, you know, we're clearing him. We're exonerating him or something like that. And then what do we do then? I mean, I'm trying not to hang my hopes on this Mueller guy.
Well, I mean, he's going to do what he's going to do, but you're probably right not to hang your hopes on him. Because if he came back and said, I've got the evidence, Donald Trump killed Cock Robin, and here's the lead pipe he did it with, okay? The Republican Congress wouldn't do anything about that.
No, they would at least if they did decide to eventually, they would drag their feet like crazy, or just all out ignore it.
Yeah. Hey, 19 minutes before the hour, let me jump in here and say that Darlene's challenge is still on the table and has been untouched. So hopefully it will not go untouched for much longer, and we can finish taking a big chunk out of the fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Darlene, for making it, and thank you to anyone who responds to it and helps us meet it. Thank you very, very much indeed. Charlie has sat patiently by, and we have not heard from Charlie this evening. What's happening, Charlie?
Oh, nothing much, Bob. I'm just sitting here listening to everybody. You know, I tell you what, I am perplexed about Trump. I wonder how long it's going to take the American people to realize that the guy's just totally nuts. I mean, you know. It's becoming more and more apparent each and every day, just from the stuff he says and stuff like that, you know. And it's, I don't know, it's just amazing to me that the American people hadn't figured it out yet, or maybe they have. I don't know. Maybe they just want somebody that's nuts.
No, they want somebody who will confirm their biases, Charlie. There's a whole bunch of America, a lot more than most anybody in this country thinks, who were really, really happy when he said there are some nice Nazis and some nice Klansmen.
Well,
I'm at a point where one, there's the whole concept of say his name. It's almost impossible. It's very, very difficult to get people to, you know, Republicans, to say that he is, you know, a purveyor of hate, to say that he was wrong in what he said. I mean, I'm so proud of I'm drawing a blank on her name. The young woman's mother who was run over. No, the mother of the young woman who was run over, tormenting the language. She gave an interview to Good Morning America today and said, I didn't speak with Trump, and I'm not going to, because he equated my daughter with Klansmen and neo-Nazis. Yeah. What would I have to say to him?
Yeah, I heard that on the radio this morning, too, and it was, you know, it's, I don't know. You know, if you look at other countries, like, you know, you can go to Berlin or Stuttgart, and you don't see any statues of Adolf Hitler or Heinrich Himmler or anybody like that. And while we have statues of the Confederacy, you know, the generals and all in the Confederate Army, I don't understand. I know I used to work with a guy up in whenever I worked at Sperry Univac in Bristol, Tennessee. And his grandmother was very, very elderly. She had since passed away. She was very elderly when she passed away, but she was just a little girl whenever the Civil War was going on. And they lived up in Morristown, Tennessee, in Upper East Tennessee. And basically, the people up there kind of looked at the Confederate troops as nothing but white trash, you know, that were just troublemakers. And why we have statues to these people today, I don't understand it. I really don't.
Well, the best way to understand it is to simply acknowledge it, Charlie. I mean, we don't, these people want, there are, I'm willing to credit that there are some people who don't know that these monuments were put up as with the backdrop of Jim Crow, that they were put up in 1920, 1910, 1900. I'm willing to credit that there are some people who don't know that Robert E. Lee himself said he thought there should be no Confederate memorials at all. Those people, perhaps, you could reach. But there's a whole bunch of people, Charlie, who do know and who like the idea of sending little black kids to Stonewall Jackson Elementary School. Okay, no, Germany does not have Hermann Göring High School. But we've goddamn sure got a whole bunch of Robert E. Lee high schools, and we ask the great 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 grandchildren of slaves to pass through its doors every fucking day, and that's wrong. And we should be able to say plainly that that is wrong.
Well, most decent people, they wouldn't put up statues and memorials to something like that. It's like we were talking about the people in Germany. You know, they kind of try to, you know, ignore it, and maybe it'll go away, and we're sorry that it happened, rather than, hey, look what we did. You know, that's just not a good way to be. And, you know, a lot of these people claim to be religious, and if you read in the Bible, in what's called the New Testament today, whenever the Apostle Paul was being asked about eating meat that was sacrificed to idols, he said, well, that doesn't mean anything. He said, whether I eat it or not, but if it offends somebody, I will never eat meat again. And, you know, if something offends somebody, you just don't keep rubbing it in their face like salt in a wound. You know, you just try to, you know, you let it go away. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just, it's not something you brag about.
Well, I think you're right. But by the same token, there's plenty that others do.
Yeah. And just one other quick note here. What I want to see is this weekend, whenever there's 10,000 extra people show up in Gallatin, where they're gonna put them all.
There's that. Hey, it could be a little. It could be a little crazy there. A lot crazy. Yeah. By the way, thanks going out to Kitty from Boston. She's just kicked in on the challenge. That means we got $85 to go. Kitty said, for Darlene's challenge, I'm asking the Horn family for some positive vibes. Nazis are invading my fair city tomorrow, and a local chapter of the KKK is planning to show up too. I'll be part of the resistance, but I'm nervous. Need those thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thanks, Kitty from Boston. Well, you know about me and prayer, but you got all the good thoughts that I can possibly send your way, and positive energy, and
best as I can do, and as best as we can do, Kitty. And please, if you're planning on being there, be safe, be alert, be aware of your surroundings. I'm probably telling you things you already know. But above all, you know, just take care and look out for yourself and for others. And if you don't mind, drop me an email or however you want to reach out and let me know what's let me know how it went, what's going on. It is disgusting to me that you'd have this in a place like Boston. But then again, while it's disgusting, it's not surprising, because racism and neo-Nazism and the Klan's various disgusting bigotries, you know, it ain't just a Southern thing. And I feel certain of it. It is not as small a problem as people who desperately want to put a good face on this. It's not as small a problem as people think. There are more people who sympathize with that kind of vicious anti-American behavior than I think we're afraid to acknowledge how pervasive it actually is. But thank you, Kitty, and let us know, and do please be safe. Thank you. And that means with 9 minutes to go, $85 to meet Darlene's challenge. Meanwhile, also with just a few minutes to go in the program, lo and behold, you may have heard the chirp in the background. Scott in San Diego has joined in. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob. I'm sorry I'm a little late getting to the show. I listened for a while in the waiting room while I was waiting for them to call my name to get my hair cut. I can't tell you how shag nasty I looked. I'll have to send you a picture that I took a couple of weeks ago. I look like something from a monster film. And I can't honestly tell you how long I put off getting the haircut. But the place that I have started going to is just around the corner. But it took a while to have my name called. Otherwise, I would have gotten home sooner. But I was listening up until the time they called my name. But I thought the city of Boston was going to try to put the kibosh on that gathering. I take it that was not successful.
Not according to Kitty. They're going to march.
Well, that's too bad.
They're going to get their asses kicked. I don't think Bostonians are going to stand for a bunch of Nazis in their streets, you know?
Well, I hope that they won't. I truly do. But then again, back in the early 70s, I don't know about the city of Boston, but I know some of those neighborhoods surrounding it were not real big fans of school busing for purposes of integration.
Yeah, South Boston.
Oh, no, there's plenty of racism to go around. Here's the difference, though. I don't think they can bring their own guns and try to outgun the police in Boston.
Oh, no, no way. No way. But the only thing I have to bring to the party today is directed toward anyone who is friends with Bob on Facebook. I came across a painting and a caption that I shared on Bob's Facebook. It's an old painting of a man on a horse, a statue of a man on a horse, and there's a rope around the statue. And at the other end of the rope, there's a bunch of people pulling and folks gathered around with torches, and they're pulling that bad boy down. And here's the caption, memo to Donald Trump: pulling down statues of tyrants and losers is part of a grand American tradition. This painting documents the destruction of the gilded lead statue of King George III of Great Britain in Bowling Green, New York, by the New Yorkers and the Continental soldiery after the Declaration of Independence had been read to Washington's troops on the Commons on July 9th, 1776. And my postscript to Mr. Trump, read a goddamn book every now and then. Why don't you? And I was unaware that King George's statue had been pulled down low those many, many moons ago. But it does my heart a world of good to know that, and also that once again, history makes a goddamn fool out of Donald J. Trump. A fool and a liar.
Well, so anybody, you know, oxygen on planet Earth makes a fool out of Donald Trump.
Well, there is that. The elements in the crust itself, who sit silent, sometimes deep.
Because it's not much of a it's not much of a job to make something that makes something of something that something already is.
Well, that is true.
That would boy, I tell you what, that sentence would drive a transcriptionist nuts. he likes his fake history. He doesn't like the real kind because, by virtue of being a Republican, he's surrounded by people. Somewhere along the way, somebody told him that Black Jack Pershing story, and it stuck with him because he likes the idea of mass murder of Muslims. He thinks that that would actually solve something when we've been mass murdering Muslims since 2001, and it doesn't seem to have gotten the trick done. But he loves the violative idea. And they dipped the bullets in pig's blood, and they shot 49, and the 50th one, they said, go back and tell them we shot people with pig's blood. And they didn't have problems for 25 years.
Yeah, but
you fucking idiot. Yeah, it's not even remotely true. It's the same kind of made-up history you get out of David Barton, okay? And the bullshit quotes from Lincoln that you see on Facebook. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, there's icing on the cake. Not only does he like the bullshit history, which has been debunked and discounted numerous times, but one of the commentators on TV said he added 10 years to the story between tellings. When he first started telling it, it was 15 years, and then the more recent iterations, it was 25 years. So he can't even keep his own story straight.
Jesus. Oh, and by the way, just to update, Sailor Chick in the chat room said, I just looked at the Boston Globe. The free speech rally is on for tomorrow. So there we go.
Well, I hope everybody is able to stay safe and that the police do a good job.
I do, too, but I guess there'll be massive media coverage of it, too.
Oh, I'm sure there will.
And then probably a little bit later, there'll be mass media coverage of Chrissy Field in San Francisco.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's by the bridge.
Yeah, and then they'll be in Vancouver, too, although I got a note from Lauren saying that the one in Vancouver has about something like 140 neo-Nazis and Klansmen showing up and 1,600 people registered to oppose them.
Well, there you go. That's how to do it.
Yeah. So... But look, you know, we cannot pretend that this is some small problem.
No, it's not. It's truly not. And, you know, I want for cool heads to prevail, but I also want us to dwell in the kingdom of reality and decency. That's something that you don't hear a lot about in this world today, is decency. And there's some people who have no idea what that means. They may have some twisted version of it that they think it is, but we've got to be decent with one another.
Well, what did Kurt Vonnegut say? God damn it, babies, you've got to be kind.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And how much progress are we making in the world when Joe Scarborough has introduced an EP of his band and he took the title of his EP from a book by Kurt Vonnegut? The idea of Joe Scarborough, Kurt Vonnegut fan, just tickles me pink.
That would surprise me about him because he doesn't seem the type. I've found over the years that Vonnegut fans are a certain type. You know?
They're, yeah, a certain type, very much unlike Joe Scarborough.
Well, that's what I mean. He would not strike me. I mean, he's more of the Ayn Rand type of reader, or the, who's that guy that did the bell curve, the Murray guy?
Oh, Charles Murray, Ayn Rand. Yeah, he seems like probably a big Milton Friedman fan. But anyway, you slice it, we got to get out of here, Scott. We got to get out of here, everybody. Thank you so much, everybody, for jumping in. It was a good conversation this evening. We were all over the place. Pardon me. I hope you weren't too put off by my long and semi-serious little filibobster there at the beginning. But I needed to get it out. I needed to get it out of me before it, like, you know, festered and yuck. Thank you, Thomas, for jumping in. We have $75 to go as we close the program. $75 to go to meet Darlene's challenge, and then another 90 to go on top of that to get out of the hole that we are presently in. Thanks, everybody, for sharing your precious finite time in listening to the program. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Enjoy your trip. Enjoy the eclipse. Everybody, enjoy the eclipse. Please enjoy it safely and wisely. And, you know, if you can't find your eclipse glasses, there are several things to do apart from looking directly at the sun. Welder's goggles are nice, I'm told. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend.